Previously.tv Podcast Network.
This is personal.
Okay. You're not entirely wrong. We do have history.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 220 for the week of September 24th, 2018. I am endless supply of vintage Ferraris, David T. Cole, and I'm here with era-appropriate shorts inseam, Sarah D. Bunting.
Hanging brain across time.
Major Dobo, Tara Ariano.
Obey my dogs.
Doberman Training Academy graduate, Stephen J. Skelton.
Grr! Wine, wine!
And anal retentive homemaker, Todd Robert Anderson.
Oh my God!
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Extra Hot Great. Full house this week for episode 220. We are talking about the CBS reboot of Magnum P.I. with our very excellent guests, Stephen J. Skelton and TV's Todd Robert Anderson. Welcome, guys.
Hello.
Welcome, guys.
Yay!
So I asked Stephen and Todd here today because I know that they are big Magnum fans, probably even bigger fans of the original Magnum P.I. than I, which is saying a lot. Guys, the reboot is upon us. We heard rumors for a while. We were going to have a Magnum's Daughter show for a while. That didn't happen. Now we're getting a proper reboot of the original Magnum. Top level thoughts. We'll start with you, Stephen.
I'll say this. It was an honest try at a reboot. You know, they were trying to hit all of the elements of the original show. But from the beginning, when they kind of cast Robin Masters as Tom Clancy,
right.
I started having a lot of questions just immediately.
Right. And what did you think of it, Todd?
I'm in the same place. I mean, I felt like they were doing their best to kind of recapture what the original was, but I don't think they quite got there. And I had there were a lot of questions. Firstly, is Magnum from space? Because that's how it starts. He's in space and he comes to Earth, right?
Yeah, I think he's K-Pax. He's from K-Pax, right?
It's basically Hawaiian Starman. That's the show. I mean, it's So if you haven't watched the new Magnum, the episode starts with basically a Red Bull drop from outer space into North Korea to the tune of AC/DC's Thunderstruck.
Yeah, I thought Iron Man was going to show up.
It almost was like that. And the cap to that whole intro sequence was that it was all CG and it was all TV grade CG, which made it just amazing. Like there was no sharp edges on anything. Everything looked like the polygon count had been reduced so you can run it on your local video card.
Well, we should say we watched a screener that was from May. So it's possible that the version that aired was better.
It was not.
Okay. So.
Okay, noted.
I actually, at one point while I was watching last night, and I watched it again this morning to make sure there wasn't something wrong with my TV, but there were times when I was like, is something wrong with my high def signal right now? Is it not streaming properly? That's how the effects look to me.
CBS has pioneered the Vaseline CG lens. It's well done.
Yeah, exactly.
Opening seemed to be them trying to say that this is not your father's Magnum, even though, as Sarah said before the show, actually probably is my father's Magnum, as all CBS shows are your father's ex.
Yeah, well, my father is 76 years old and likes the show Magnum is on now, Blue Bloods. So that's where I think my parents would enjoy this show in the way that older parents enjoy CBS procedurals.
Right.
There's nothing challenging here. The lead is inoffensive. I can't swear that he has genitalia that work. I mean, this is just like a very like chemistry-free undertaking.
Yes.
That is completely inessential.
Go ahead, finish, sorry.
I mean, I really actually don't have anything else to say. There's really nothing to say about this. Like, there's nothing bad to say about it. My only question, like, I am interested to hear our guests' questions, because yeah. my only question was why the objects of the rescue in the opening scene were continuing to sit up and like huddle as a family sitting up while they're being shot at. Like, you're in the back seat, fucking lie down. But that was the only question I had, because everything in this is completely like, I don't understand why this is, when they have Hawaii Five-0 and when they have, you know, other shows that spiritually are indistinguishable from this. But it's not for me. It's for seniors, and I'm all set.
I definitely agree with you. Yeah, I definitely agree with you, because it's weird. It's very Hawaii Five-0, the reboot of Five-0, because you do have the high def Hawaii porn shot, which is an enjoyable element of Hawaii Five-0. But this show just came off as very bland, as opposed to the original Magnum. And I was trying not to compare the two, but that's impossible.
Yeah,
there is a blandness to it, and it's like. Hostile guy, Jay, what's New Magnum's name? I'm already forgetting.
Hernandez.
Jay Hernandez, yeah, the guy from Hostel, who, yeah. you know, I liked in Hostel, but it almost seemed like he was working hard to have the kind of fun that you expect Magnum to have fun because of Tom Selleck Magnum, but it didn't feel like he was getting there. It was weird.
Yeah, it seemed like they were worried that if they cast anyone that was too charming, like, it would turn some people off. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I forget the name of the guy who's the lead on the new Hawaii Five-0. It's like that he's Australian or something. Like,
Alex O'Loughlin. I did an episode of that show, and I have a man crush on him, just so you know.
Okay. I apologize. To me, he's just totally forgettable, like, lump of flesh in TV actor form. Like, and I feel like Jay Hernandez, who I've liked in other things before, he's so, I mean, Sarah's estimation of his genitals is probably, is the problem. Like, he's so, there's no better word than bland. His, whatever chemistry he's supposed to have with Girl Higgins, like, there is none, because she's also extremely boring.
I think he might be TV's last contemporary goateed hero as well. So, I mean, he's
perhaps. But he's also too short. He's so wee. He's tiny. He's a tiny little man.
Everybody in the show is tiny, though.
I had one note I wrote down about him, and it was, this is a mostly hairless Magnum.
Yeah. And that doesn't work.
Yeah.
You remember that game people used to play where they would put a mustache on the TV and wait till somebody floats into frame?
Sure. Like,
this is the perfect candidate for that. You put Magnum PI 1980s mustache on the screen. You wait till Jay Hernandez walks into it. Then you all have a drink.
Yeah. Speaking of people named Hernandez and mustaches, one of my like three notes was that I wished that almost any other Hernandez was the star of this, but most especially Keith Hernandez.
Sure.
So everyone just take a minute and imagine what a fantastic world we would live in if Keith Hernandez was Magnum PI. It would be like 41 minutes of him talking about steak and hanging out with his cat, but it would still be more interesting than this. Just
that sounds
opinion.
Good to me.
Yeah.
That does sound good.
You know, I did compare it to the original Magnum insofar that, okay, obviously, you know, there's a gender flip on Higgins and stuff like that. But for me, the biggest difference is Tom Selleck is very charming as Magnum PI. And this guy is just kind of a dink. He's like, at times he's generically bland and forgettable. But like, for me, there was a progression. Like, the opening with the Red Bull outer space skydive was, oh, you can't be serious. They mitigate that a little bit after the credit sequence as like, oh, that was Robin Masters' sort of retelling of it in his book. But, you know, not really. It's sort of a cheat. And then the first sort of like Magnum PI action we have is we discover that he has put shock collars on Zeus and Apollo, the Doberman guard dogs at Robin's nest.
Yeah,
so right off the bat, this guy's like an asshole. You don't put those collars on dogs.
No.
Especially if they're not your dogs.
They're not your dogs. And also the whole sequence is treated as like a lark. You know, like, oh,
yeah,
well,
that's not cute. Like,
Well, because it's also like, you know, in the original show, Magnum is kind of an jerk to Higgins all the time, but it's balanced out by they play his war experiences more traumatically in the original show than it's been presented so far in the premiere. The premiere was just kind of like, hey, we're surviving this badass situation. We're kind of badasses, you know, cauterizing wounds. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really get a balance of, you know, Magnum behavior, why he behaves the way he behaves.
Yeah.
He's just kind of jerky this time around versus, you know, behaving in a juvenile yeah. manner to, because he's really kind of suppressing PTSD and all the, you know, the really more serious themes they treated more seriously in the original show so far.
Thomas yeah. Magnum 2018 is what Call of Duty people think every Marine guy, yeah. every Navy guy
that,
is.
That was my other note was Magnum PI, the video game cutscene.
Yeah. And then after the shock collar thing, which is like already had me on my heels, the next thing he sort of does is the plot of the pilot is that, you know, we have Rick, we have TC, we have Magnum, and then there's a fourth guy that they've introduced, you know, another one of the army buddies, and he gives Magnum a call in a panic, says, you got to come over here, something really big's happening. Magnum gets over to his house. There's an ambulance in the driveway, and Magnum parks right in front of the driveway, blocking the ambulance. Now, 10 seconds later, we find out that the ambulance is actually, you know, a beginning of commando-esque civil service men actually with Uzi's situation. But he didn't know that when he parked the car there. So Thomas Magnum just drives up to his friend's house, blocks an ambulance in the driveway. So, you know, two strikes within the first 10 minutes of the show against Thomas Magnum as a character. And for the rest of the show, he's just sort of there. And he doesn't really have the charisma that Tom Selleck brought to the original. And it kind of just brings the whole show down.
I don't know why they would even, like, if they just wanted to make another cop show in Hawaii, which, fine, like, you know, as Todd said, why would you, but okay,
Hawaii 5-1,
right? But then why, like, no one who likes the, I feel like I can say this categorically, no one who likes the original could possibly like this. Like, anyone who is tuning in just out of curiosity is going to be like, fuck this, get me my DVDs, I'm never looking at this again, because it's like, it's so off-putting. It captures nothing about what makes the original so likeable.
I would say it's mildly off-putting and then boring for 90%
yeah,
of it.
Yes, it yeah. is. Yeah. It's,
I mean,
so
it really is. It really does feel like a case of, hey, what other IP do we own that's set in Hawaii?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep, it does. I had a couple questions about the lads as well. And yeah. one of them was, you know, these dogs hate him. And then he comes up and he talks to the sad kid on the bench with a tennis ball, and he throws the ball. And these dogs that are always chasing him and attacking him run for the ball. So these guard dogs are too stupid not to chase a ball, even though they've been trained to hate Magnum. And then the other moment, like in the beginning where they're, you know, they have to do this requisite. Magnum runs from Doberman's thing because it was in the original, and he runs by Higgins is doing her yoga, and he runs by and he gets to his cabana and the door is closed, and he gets in there and he shuts it, and he's happy that he escaped the dogs. And then he steps immediately in dog shit, which who
or
put
was
that
it?
There? Did Higgins open the door and tell the dogs to shit there?
I mean, or Higgy just dropped a deuce there.
Oh, shit.
That's the story I'm going with. That's the most Higgy interesting seems. Take.
You got to make your own fun when you're thinking about new Magnum PI.
In an answer to your original question, perhaps there was an incident at the Robin's Nest where, like, they were attacked by, like, tennis professionals, and therefore the tennis ball, they were trained to chase tennis balls or something like that.
That's a real reach, but okay. I'll go with it. I'll
David T. Cole, new Magnum apologist.
Oh, God.
Seeing Higgins as a woman made me wish that it had been Magnum's daughter. And of all the, I'm all for gender swapping, but of all the characters to swap, it's Higgins who is a nag and aggravating to all these now still male characters on the show. I thought that was a weird and unfortunate choice.
But she also has to be able to kick ass, which Dave tells me is not something original Higgins ever did. Like,
no.
Physically, never beat anyone up.
No.
That was it. Yeah, they added Jim Cotta to Higgins's skill set for the reboot.
She also looks so much like Carrie Condon from Better Call Saul, and I hate that character, so that didn't help either.
Yeah, you have to wonder where, like, how far down in the casting wish list each of these people
was. I would love to see that
list. Because it's like Dave from Happy Endings? Like, really?
Mm-hmm. I thought, actually, okay, I'm going to argue within this point. I thought that was probably, insofar as the show did its casting, the best piece of casting. Like, Rick in the original is sort of a dink, and he's sort of there, and he's, like, the lesser of the group. And Dave kind of is the same.
Okay.
Yeah, he actually did come pretty close to original Rick, original recipe Rick.
Yeah.
Although, how many times is it still going to be supposedly funny to watch, you know, a white guy dancing to something like the Spice Girls when he thinks nobody's looking?
Five.
Are we going to keep doing that?
Oh, boy, that's always going to be funny.
Oh, my God, I forgot about the last Magnum dick move. So right at the end of the episode, we're jumping around the plot. You know, like it's a guy gets killed, they get revenge. At the end of the episode, they're going to their friend's funeral. And by the end of the episode, Magnum has totaled two of Robin Masters' Ferraris. And they get into a third, I don't know if it's a Ferrari or not, but they get into a third vintage sports car. And they've just had this like moment with the guy's son and the guy's wife. And they then peel away towards his funeral moments later in this car to the sting of the original Magnum theme. Like, I was like, wait, what? Did we just have an action music sting to them?
That, you know,
speeding
honestly,
to
that
a funeral?
Actually is pretty accurate to the original show, because they would go to the credits with the high octane theme, even after a very maudlin, sad ending.
I just wish they extended that scene. So it was like, dun, 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 and they're driving through Honolulu and they get to, you know, Lamb's funeral chapel. Dun, 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 dun,
dun. And then the funeral music kicks in.
No, but it's a funereal version. It's like just a minor key version.
Played on an organ.
Absolutely. Dun, dun, I think we saw what's wrong with the show, guys. there was some Hawaiian detail work that was both decent, but then also annoying. Right at the beginning of the show, TC is making bologna and pineapple sandwiches for everybody. Oh. And as Tara pointed out, they should have definitely been.
It would be spam.
It would be spam. 100%. Yeah. Or it would be like something totally spam. Like it would just be like spam wasabi or something like that. Wouldn't even be a sandwich.
Right.
And they did have malasadas in the episode, which is their jelly filled donut thing. Although they managed to make the only donut scene a bribe to the chubby M.E. in the show. So.
Uh-huh. Well, also, one of the only like two Pacific Islanders in this show set in Hawaii.
Yeah, what the hell?
Yeah.
Well, they want to be consistent with Hawaii Five-O reboot.
Right, right.
And only have white people on it.
Jesus. Do you know the name of this pilot episode was not pilot like most shows?
Oh, do tell.
According to my TV, is called I Saw the Sunrise.
Oh, no.
Because it is kind of a half ripoff of,
yeah, it is.
Of the old original episode.
It's Shikes. Just a bold choice to name this a pilot episode after probably the most iconic Magnum episode, which may or may not come up later in this very podcast.
Spoiler.
Alternate title, Citizen Sugarcane or something like that.
Okay, so I have a question. Sarah already mentioned Keith Hernandez as a better, who would have been a better Magnum if this project had to happen, which it didn't, but you know it has. So I have a couple of picks of alt Magnums. One, I know The Rock has already ruined Baywatch by making it into a movie, but The Rock in a Magnum PI movie would be pretty good. Obviously he's too big to do a TV show now, but who is not too big to do TV, and I know he already has that shitty Colony show on USA, but Josh Holloway kind of has a Tom Selleck-y quality, the guy from Lost.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
If nothing else, he's got the dimples. Like, I think he's got that kind of roguish quality that I think would have been better than Jay Hernandez's aggressive sexlessness. Right. Dave.
John Hamm.
Yeah.
I mean, he's too big, too, but, you know, I think he fits all the Selleck-esque check boxes that I would want to
agree
see done. Yeah. Sarah.
Yep.
Keith Hernandez.
Yep. Steven.
Yeah, it's hard to follow Keith Hernandez, but I'll say who I like to replace in almost any kind of genre thing. I'll just say put a mustache on Carl Urban.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Sure.
I'll get my wife to watch, that's for sure.
Todd?
You know, I do like the not casting a white guy as Magnum. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go with Lombardo Boyar.
Oh, Lombardo, yes.
He's very charming. He has an excellent mustache. Okay. He was on the show. What was the show, Steve? Murder in the First?
Yeah.
Oh, him. Okay.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
He's actually on that show. He was pretty hard ass, but he's actually really, really funny. So he can do both the things that's required of Magnum.
Absolutely.
All right. I love it. Is anyone going to watch this again? I am not.
No.
No, but I will allow them to fly me to Hawaii to do an episode.
That's mighty generous.
Very generous of you.
TV Todd's always working the ankles. Before we get off Magnum, I do have one thing to say.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
I am not a crackpot, but in any TV show, if you have a series of numbers that you yourself as a character cannot figure out, I'm just going to let you know they're always latitude and longitude lines. You don't need to go to the codebreaker that you freed in North Korea in the credits to figure out that that set of numbers that you wrote on a piece of paper or perhaps you found in a mansion or whatever are in fact just set of coordinates on a map that you can go into Google Maps, type in, and actually just get step-by-step directions to where you're supposed to go. Thank you very much. It is time to go around the dial. First stop, Tara Ariano.
I watched another network drama premiere. It was bad. It's called New Amsterdam. This is, yes, the same title as another show that was on for a month and a half. In 2008, starring a pre-Game of Thrones, Nicholas Coster, what's-his-face, among others. This is totally unrelated. It's with Ryan Eggold from Blindspot and a million other things, playing the new medical director at a hospital that is not Bellevue, but it's Bellevue in New York. And the whole conceit of it is that he used to run like a free clinic in Chinatown, and they imported him to run this place because he turned it around. Like, I don't know what that means. It pivoted to video. Who knows? But they bring this guy in and he's got all these revolutionary ideas, like this hospital, which they establish as a public hospital, has a whole department that he thinks is corrupt because they were worried too much about billing. So he fires the entire cardiac department, like, on the spot at a morning meeting, which, first of all, you're going to get super sued. Probably some of them had surgeries scheduled. You don't fire people at all in front of all of their coworkers, never mind, like, presumably highly paid surgeons.
Question.
Yeah.
Did he hire one of them back because he liked their moxie?
Yep. Okay. Sure did. He sure did, Dave. You nailed it. And then there's this whole thing with Freema, I don't know how to say her last name, from Doctor Who and the Carrie Diaries, who she's like some kind of jet-setting famous oncologist who also works there, but she's never there because she's always like going on TV and giving speeches, and he has to like tough love her in this case, meaning he has the hospital's doctor, like, or driver, take her back to the hospital instead of to the airport like she requested, because that's appropriate. Like, this woman gets in a car and then doesn't know where she's going. Not scary or weird or controlling at all. My whole problem with this, based on the promos alone, and I was correct, is that like the conceit of it is he's the only doctor who really cares about treating people rather than worrying about the bottom line, which, if that's going to be where you start on a show that is set in America, like, just define what it means for this to be a public hospital. Like, why is billing an issue at all? I didn't understand that. I assume some people do, but like, I don't. If the whole thing is that they don't treat people who don't have insurance, like, what, why, how does this? And then it's like, you know, like, everyone is supposed to just start becoming a social worker as well, which, like, that's a lovely idea, but like, people have jobs to do. This is totally preposterous and dumb. And since it's already, it will have aired by the time this podcast drops, I'm sorry to spoil it for the people on this podcast who are about to listen. At the end of the episode, we find out he's had this tickle in his throat for 6 weeks and he's been putting it off because he's so busy and important. He's cares about everyone except himself. He has cancer, or as I put it in my notes, LOL, he has cancer. Like, it's just so, it's so dumb. It's like to add these stakes to this guy we don't know. And then after that, it was like every episode should end with a different cast member getting cancer, because this is like,
also it's Ryan Eggold. Like,
yeah, if who you're gonna, cares?
If the guy's supposed to be a renegade, like, maybe cast someone who isn't like a yawn with a sweater over it. Like,
yep.
I just don't understand.
Yeah. It's like there's this list at the networks of who they can cast, and they all have to be the most boring actors you've ever seen, who've just been like working up the ranks in shitty shows you watched twice in order to like eventually get to headline them. And like, who, like, there's nothing to grab onto in this show. I also felt bad for Tyler Labine, who I do think is like a decent actor and funny. He plays the head of psychology, but he's also Canadian. So like, the whole thing of him trying to act like any of this is like really revolutionary. Like, just go home, treat people in the country where they've figured this out. Anyway, New Amsterdam is bad. Don't watch it. Also, the lead can't wink, which is very upsetting to our friend Linda Holmes, recent guest. For my plug, I'll just mention again with this, our 90210 podcast, we are up to season 9. Help. things have really, really gone off the rails, not only on the show, but for us personally. And our last podcast that we recorded was like longer than the episode we were talking about. So if that's appealing to you.
Favorite part of the writing for the last season you guys have been talking about is they had one episode where a major character leaves and a major character returns, but they actually do it like one scene and then the next. They actually don't cross paths at all.
Especially since they were characters who like fucked when they were both on the show at the same time. Yep. So it's extra dumb.
Yep.
Anyway, extra dumb, 90210, the Again With This podcast. Please subscribe. Thank you.
Would you like to learn some new swears? You could do that.
All right, let us hear from Mr. Skelton.
Oh, yeah. I watched that Netflix Jonah Hill, Emma Stone show Maniac, which is a kind of directed by Cary Fukunaga, who you know from True Detective, Beasts of No Nation, and I think he was just announced for Bond 25.
Yep.
Yes.
It's very kind of like Twilight Zone-ish / Black Mirror-ish miniseries. That's
by way of Kubrick.
Yeah, by way of Kubrick. It leans very heavily into the kind of like late 70s, early 80s sci-fi aesthetic, which I love. So I may be, you know, giving the show more credit than it deserves, just because I thought it was the production design was great. And
it was amazing.
The look and kind of the weird alternate world to our own that they kind of built for this story was really interesting and compelling. And it's essentially a, you know, mad scientist experiment of trying to create drugs to solve emotional problems. And in the thrust of the show, Jonah Hill and Emma Stone, their kind of consciousnesses start to overlap and they have shared experiences. So they, sometimes entire episodes are devoted to the weird dream world that they're in that episode. And a lot of that was kind of fun and interesting and odd and surreal and more what I was hoping way back when Inception was going to be. But Inception was just like hotel rooms and, and action sequences for dream states and not very surreal. And Maniac gets extremely surreal. It's a kind of a slow burn show. I wouldn't say it's slow paced, but it's very deliberately paced. It's not worried about picking up the pace. So you kind of have to lean back and relax to get into it. Otherwise, you might not be your bag. Although I enjoyed most of it. I thought the ending was a little predictable, a little kind of like, oh, they're going to end it that way. Oh, all right. But it does have a really cool thing that I wish existed in the real world, which in their alternate version of our present, they have little robots that drive around on the sidewalk and clean up dog poop.
The poop bots, they were so cute.
I got super excited at that.
The great thing about the dog poop robots is that they're little miniature Department of Sanitation garbage trucks.
Yeah,
like they even have the lowercase Helvetica sanitation label on them. Yeah, it's kind of. I watched the first two episodes so far, and I haven't got into any of the like bonkers stuff that you're, you know, that you see in the trailers.
With, yeah, it takes three or four episodes for that stuff to really kick in.
But I wish they swapped the first two episodes. I wish we started with Emma Stone and then went into Jonah Hill. Jonah Hill's, he's just like, he just mumbles his way through the whole thing. It was so, like, it really took a lot of energy for me to say yes to the second episode after watching the first one. Like, if it wasn't for the set direction being so spot on and sort of like a feast for the eyes, like, I am mildly interested in the storyline. I am very interested in just watching it.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks amazing.
And what do you have to plug there?
Our podcast, Film Pigs podcast, I do with Todd and our third film pig, Stephen Falk, who you all know. And
are you talking about the Chains of Love recapper, Stephen Falk?
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but legally he's required to be part of the podcast. So
That's good of you. That's generous. But,
yeah, so we do a monthly podcast, movie-centric. You can go to filmpigs.com and find it there, and we do other weird stuff like occasional commentary tracks for whole movies, MST3K style, but drunker, I guess. And when the websites are functional, actual sketches and show stuff that is in video format. But I don't know what's happened to that right now. The website we did it for is offline.
So
all right,
go to filmpigs.com. You may find something, you may not.
Yeah, who knows? We'll link it in the show notes.
Either way, we can vouch for the podcast. Me and Tara have been on it. It was super fun to be on and super fun to listen.
Yes, for sure.
All right, Sarah, your turn.
The Good Place is a good show and you should watch it. If you're, you know, one of the four people / newborns who is not watching the show, it will have returned. I think.
It comes back this week, Thursday.
Yeah, this week. Absolutely. Get it back on the DVR. It's so good. I saw the first three episodes of the season and there's always this like little anxiety that you're like, this is where they can't get out of it. Like, this is where they paint themselves into a corner and just can't get out. And even if that does happen, I'll be fine with it. They'll find some shortcut that they can do. And I'll be like, okay, well, we all knew this was going to happen one day, but it still hasn't happened yet. And the fact that they can continue to like reset timelines, find ways to reunite people and then blow them apart and then reunite them again. And the way they use these like tesseracts basically, but aren't, you know, self-serious about it in the way that people who might use a tesseract reference sometimes could be, present company excluded. It's just amazing. Like, I'm amazed every time. And occasionally I just have to pause it and be like, I don't exactly know how they did that. And the ways that they do it, like, of course, once you've seen it done, it makes perfect sense. But looking at it and knowing that in a million years, I would never be able to get myself out of these like temporal time and space corners that the writers get themselves into, it's just really a good show. And Ted Danson is having the time of his goddamn life. It's really amazing to see. There are many, many brilliant jokes in both foreground and background. And I am super excited that it's back. The fact that it exists just like makes me happy and is hopeful.
Me and Tara have been rewatching the first two seasons, and Ted Danson has to have top five evil laughs. Like when he is first discovered at the tail end of season one, and he has that just laugh to Eleanor. It is infectious. It is amazing. And,
but it was also like at the time it was like legit a little bit frightening.
Yeah.
Intimidating. Yeah. Like yeah. in yeah. a sitcom. Yeah. He's great. He's really good. So yes, The Good Place.
You know, everything you just said about, you know, temporal corner painting and everything like that, like all that is like everything that's wrong with Westworld.
Thank you for confirming my decision to continue not watching it.
Yeah.
For my plug, I have a podcast with my friend Mark. It is called Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. Shocker. That's what we do. Lately, we've been talking about such artists as Paul Davis and Angie Dickinson. And
sure.
Coming up, we will be talking about Carly Rae Jepsen, and it sort of takes a turn. So you can go to iTunes or wherever you download podcasts and search for Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. We've got a lot going on.
Plus, I believe, Sarah, you just dropped another episode of Dan and Tracy's new podcast, yes?
Yes, we did, in which Kim Zolciak's, like, I would say lesser known, but it's like not known. I'm shocked that they even found a track of it, but it's like this country. I also can't use the word tune because not in a bucket could Kimsey carry a tune, but their folksy reimagining of it is really like beautiful and touching. And that is also when the Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs family. It's right in the same podcast stream. You don't have to subscribe to anything separately. So yes, that's Money Can't Buy You podcast, and new episodes of that will be forthcoming at some point once Yay. New baby fun times have subsided.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap up around the dial with Todd.
Hey, ever since the second season of Claws ended, I've been sort of floundering in my TV watching, trying to find something that can replace it, because there's a lot of stuff I like, but I couldn't find another potato chip show, which is, you know, not eating potato chips, but it's like one episode. Oh my God, I gotta have another one right away.
Totally.
And I'm always looking for stuff to watch with my kid who's 12 going on 13. And a couple weeks ago put on Family Ties because he'd never seen it. And that has become my new potato chip show.
Aw.
And I know it's very nostalgic for me for obvious reasons, but I just, the first season within a few episodes, they're tackling so many crazy issues like, you know, molesty uncles and expose articles in newspapers that can take down your family members. And I realize it is sort of a liberal fantasy to imagine a Republican character who in the end will do the right thing. but maybe that fantasy is part of it. Now it's a fantasy. So it's got nostalgia and fantasy for me. And every episode, at least three good loud laughs come out of me. And then by the end, I'm also crying. So it has everything I look for in TV. So, you know, if you've never seen the damn thing, you should watch it. It's great.
Where is it now? Hulu?
I found it on Amazon Prime.
Right. Okay.
Everything you just explained about why Family Ties is such a good show is why Westworld is such a bad show. What do you have to plug there, Todd?
I'm going to plug a show called You're the Worst, which a couple weeks ago I wrapped my last scene in the final season, which was very sad.
And who do you play on that show for the benefit of our audience?
I play Dr. Vernon Barbara, who is a terrible doctor and is often found simulating masturbation in strange situations.
Sure,
trash
sure.
juice.
I was just going to ask, is there trash juice in your final scene?
Close. There is trash juice. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Not. Yes.
Very good.
In a very wonderful way. But
excellent.
I think the season's going to start. I think they're airing it starting in January, but I'm not really sure. But the first four seasons are on Hulu now. So check them out. Watch it.
We'll
it's
link
funny.
That too.
Hey, hey, it's time for the canon. And as promised, during our lead topic, we got Magnum P.I. Is it too soon to induct the pilot episode of Magnum P.I. 2018 into the canon? Let's find out. No, not really. It's a classic episode. And Todd and Steven are going to team up on this mission. Take it away, guys.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Our entry for the canon, it's from the original Magnum P.I. show starring Tom Selleck's mustache, with frequent guest stars Tom Selleck's Hawaiian shirts and Tom Selleck's short shorts.
Yeah.
It is the season 3 premiere episode titled Did You See the Sunrise? Written by series creator Donald P. Belisario. It aired September 30th, 1982 as one uninterrupted story and was later split into two episodes for syndication. Now, a major element of what makes the original Magnum P.I. series unique is how its entire concept acts as a bridge between the more grounded proto-procedural shows of the 70s, like The Rockford Files and Quincy M.E., and the 80s shift to high-concept action-adventure, like The A-Team, Knight Rider, and, dear God, that car was so racist, The Dukes of Hazzard. Sure, Dukes premiered in 79, but it was way ahead of the curve regarding 80s high-concept nonsense. Magnum P.I. the show embraced the goofiness, the drama, and the action into one package, and Did You See the Sunrise is a perfect encapsulation of all those elements, making it not only a complete distillation of the Magnum P.I. concept itself, but also a perfect example of the styles and storytelling techniques of early 80s American popular television. Okay, so the basic plot, it's the episode, it's an old Vietnam War buddy shows up claiming he's being stalked by Ivan, the ruthless Russian officer that tortured them when they were captives during the war, as is noted by this clip, complete with classic 80s dramatic music stings.
You see?
Uh-huh.
I'm not hearing no R&R. He's after me.
Who?
Ivan.
Okay, so it turns out this old war buddy is really a Russian agent working with Ivan to use Magnum's friend TC, Manchurian candidate style, to assassinate visiting dignitaries. A very super Cold War-y plotline. You can practically see Reagan in your mind's eye clenching his fist and hissing "that bastard" every time Ivan makes an appearance. Magnum and the crew save the day, of course, and just as it looks like Ivan is going to get away scot-free, Magnum confronts him and makes a fateful decision to take revenge. It's a solid plot for light adventure or serious drama, and in true Magnum P.I. fashion, this episode gives us both.
As Mr. Skelton said, Magnum really straddled the tones of 70s procedurals and 80s action-oriented hour-longs. The silliness, which was a staple of Magnum, is an element more 80s than 70s, and in no small way was why I personally love the show so much. This episode runs the gamut, this goofiness wildly juxtaposed against some of the most hardcore darkness seen on television in the early part of the decade. This episode has a ton of it, and the episode launches with poor Higgins screaming at TC and Thomas because they have landed the island hopper chopper on the grounds of Robin Masters' estate so TC can take Thomas and his surf ski kayak out into the ocean. You get the requisite "oh my God" moment from Higgins, which is always, always incredibly satisfying. Here's a clip of that.
I warned you the next time you landed on Robin Masters' estate without permission, I'd have the FAA revoke your license.
Well, I got permission.
You got permission from whom?
Him.
Him? Him? He can't grant you permission.
Higgins, that Tanker Ranch strawberry jam is just horrific.
What?
What? Is something wrong?
Wrong? Wrong?
Do you hear an echo?
You can't grant him permission to land here. Only I can do that.
And then Magnum and TC giggle like schoolchildren as they lift off with Higgins screaming at them. Some say Higgins was an uptight twit, but we all need to put ourselves in his shoes. He is essentially a father figure with the responsibilities of running a home constantly at odds with teenage level antics. Now, why PTSD in Magnum seems to make grown men act like teenagers is not clear to me, given that my grandfather flew a bomber in World War II, was shot down behind enemy lines and rode out the war in prison with a broken leg and 2 bullet wounds, and never, ever acted like a teenager. In fact, he had a high level of disdain for teenagers. My grandfather sounded more like Higgins, as exemplified in this clip.
Robin Masters' estate.
Evening, Higgy baby.
God, you have incredible gall.
Iggy, I know you're a little perturbed.
A little. A little.
There's that echo again.
You have no concept of the depth of my ire.
Then we have a moment where Rick, who is a criminal in bed with local organized crime bosses and wears a ludicrous pink shirt. He's playing bookie at the King Kamehameha Club. He gets busted by Higgins and is forced to give all proceeds to charity to keep from getting fired. And it makes him hilariously sad, just like a kid getting caught with his hands in the cookie jar. And then we have an entire sequence where Magnum is guilted into taking his old Navy pal Mac on a date with him. It shows both the sweetness of Magnum and his characteristic bad decision-making that comes along with that sweetness. Magnum's date, who apparently hates Hawaii and its native traditions even more than Scott Kahn does, is miserable on the car ride over, miserable at the club where they hang out, and guilts Magnum into joining into a hula dance, kind of. And then she is groped by one of the Hawaiian dancers, which was weird. But hey, it was the 80s and everyone was on cocaine. Different, grosser times. Still, the entire sequence plays like a teenage sex comedy from the same era. But then, just when you are lulled into a false sense of bubbly silliness.
Hey, what do you say we drive up to Polly Lookout and watch the sunrise? It ought to be beautiful.
And Magnum's friend is exploded in Magnum's Ferrari. So, and which brings things back down to drama. So at its core, Magnum P.I. is rooted in trauma, specifically the trauma of war, or PTSD, during the era when PTSD was being officially defined. Many episodes feature flashbacks to events in Vietnam, and Did You See the Sunrise focuses specifically on the time when Magnum and TC were held captive and tortured by the evil Soviet officer Ivan, played with chilling menace by Bo Svensson, as you can hear in this clip.
Would you two like to settle your differences out here?
Yeah!
Right on!
You think that I am stupid? Your little theatrical improvisation might fool my comrades, but not me. It is a stupid schoolboy trick.
And I didn't even include the, even for the 80s, alarming amount of racist language Ivan uses to torture TC. These frequent flashbacks and Magnum's penchant for spending a good deal of his nights watching old war movies like Stalag 17 alone in his cabana are what make the character human. You can hear in this voiceover clip.
As a kid, Stalag 17 had been one of my favorite films. I guess because it had everything. Heroes, humor, action. All the stuff a boy of 10 craves. I hadn't seen it since then and almost didn't buy the tape for fear the film might have lost some of its appeal. It hadn't. Even though I'd lived my own version of Stalag 17 since then.
The Magnum is such a childish jerk to Higgins almost 100% of the time that if the viewer didn't have this balance, these memories we know he'd rather not have to relive, that his happy-go-lucky attitude would come off as simply being an asshole rather than a man trying to deal with internalized pain. This could also lead to a show that would become too dark to explore on a weekly basis on network TV, hence the car crashes and helicopter stunts. All the main characters are dealing with trauma related to their wartime experiences. Magnum flaunts authority, TC jokes about everything, Rick runs criminal enterprises on the side. Even Higgins has his own way of dealing with his past in this episode. He spends a majority of the time building a matchstick replica of the bridge on the River Kwai, and then casually drops he was a POW there and actually helped build the thing in this clip.
Don't tell me. The bridge on the River Kwai.
Quiet. I was there, you know.
I was afraid you were.
Nothing like the film. Bridge was bombed, not blown up by some American sailor.
Not some American sailor. William Holden.
What are you talking about? He was an actor. Oh, I see. In the film. I'm glad I escaped before I was destroyed. Had to be done, of course. But I put too much bloody sweat into it to watch it go up. I remember one morning we were sent out to cut teeth for piloting. Oh, well, I'm sure he's bushed. You'll enjoy this, lads. Lieutenant Baumgartner had a touch of malaria, so I took his place that morning. I was a mere lance corporal, but nevertheless, the men looked up to me. We were trudging through the jungle when suddenly high overhead we heard the most incredible sound. There was Baumgartner up in a tree, delirious, shouting what can only be described as an obscene chant.
And while stylistically more melodramatic than modern television, Magnum P.I. takes these moments of trauma seriously. They're not there to make the characters seem more heroic. They're there to make the characters seem more human for a moment before shifting gears back to action.
Now, when I was a boy, a dumb boy, before I grew up to be a dumb man, the main reason I watched these action shows was the action. It was awesome. This episode hits all the notes of the genre and all the notes specific to Magnum. You've got the action of war, gunfights, and racing through the jungle in the Vietnam flashback sequences. If you can get any kind of action sequence in a jungle setting, then the 14-year-old in me gets hella excited. And this one has a POW torture sequence as well, which I have to imagine Chuck Norris saw and then decided to turn into an entire film franchise with missing in action. You've also got the required out-of-control car that hits a roadside shrub and launches into a flip as if there was some kind of ramp hidden in the bushes somehow. This is accompanied by some very special stunt work where Selleck's stunt double rolls around on the ground awkwardly so as to not reveal his not actually Magnum face. Magnum P.I. had its own version of Kenny from the first seasons of South Park, the Ferrari. In this one, it explodes. Well, it seems to turn into a much shittier car in the millisecond before it blows up, granted, but look, Ferraris are expensive, and on an old small tube TV, you wouldn't have noticed the switch out. Whatever. Something blows up. Explosions are cool. The real action highlight of this episode is the bonkers helicopter piloting. The island hopper or chopper hovers over the ocean so Magnum can throw his kayak into the water before he jumps in after it. Then there's a sequence where TC is happily flying around the Jurassic Park island, and then he nearly flies right into a house for no discernible reason. Excellent. And the climactic moment where TC is hovering low in front of a house that he is going to blow up with missiles that don't look like they'll work, and then another chopper with TC's buddies hovers right next to it so Magnum can talk him down, that seems to have been very, very dangerous and is amazing to look at.
In summation, Did You See the Sunrise contains all elements that make Magnum P.I. the stylistically mishmashed yet classically enjoyable show it is. Action-adventure, juvenile comedy, plus the through line of earnest drama that keeps the characters human with human flaws. And this episode pushes those flaws further than before. When Magnum finally catches up with Ivan, not only the villain of the show's story, but a personification of the trauma at the core of Magnum's being. And he simply can't let him escape, despite what Ivan says he knows about Magnum's character, which is the exact same thing the audience has known to this point as well in this clip.
I know you, Thomas. I had you for 3 months at Dock Quay. I know you better than your mother. Your sense of honor and fair play. Oh, you could shoot me if I was armed and coming after you. But like this, Thomas, never. Goodbye, Thomas. До свидания.
Ivan.
Yes?
Did you see the sunrise this morning?
Yes. Why?
So after a moment of quiet thought, Magnum turns and shoots. The frame freezes on Magnum and the muzzle flash of his pistol. He's crossed a line and killed in cold blood for revenge and possibly an attempt to rid himself of some demons, an unusually grim ending. Add to that the full gamut of early 1980s television styles, cheesy one-liners, odd too-close blocking in rooms with plenty of space, actors sometimes projecting like they're trying to reach the back of the house, overlong vehicle travel montages, and overly dramatic music stings, And Did You See the Sunrise is a perfect slice of not only Magnum P.I. the series, but also a textbook representation of early 80s television in general.
Well presented.
Wow. I feel like Dave should go last, so I'll start, and then Sarah, then Dave. Yes?
Yeah.
All right.
This was an excellent presentation of an excellent episode. You're right that there is a lot of 80s curio qualities about it. We recently did a Columbo for the canon, and that was similar, where there was like a lot of stuff that just, you know, blocking that was weird and went on too long. Like here, when Magnum is he's practicing for this kayak race, and when he finally gets to shore, it takes him like a full minute to just get out of the water and lie down on the sand. Like, am I complaining about seeing him in his extremely short, basically underpants shorts? No. They're real short, though. They're also beige, which is confusing from a distance. But yes. and the whole thing was
sad. Once the confusion ends. Sadness.
So true. And the date is another one of those where it's like the whole reason that Matt goes on this date is because he's meeting, you know, his connection there or whatever. But like all of the business with the date being the woman being sour about the whole experience is like it just goes on and on and on. you hit on all the lovely things about it. Higgins is adorable, telling a story that Magnum falls asleep to and then just resuming it to tell the dogs. So endearing. All the business with the girl sailor, who you don't really mention in your presentation, but Maggie, who keeps getting demeaned by her commanding officer and her giant Bailey
with
Quarters
all that
glasses.
Regulation Navy eyeshadow.
Yeah. Yes. that they just put her in like so that we can see some people have good attitudes toward equality and some people don't. Like, we get it. These are bad guys. Like, it's fine. The most important thing. Oh, also that the Manchurian candidate trigger for TC is gum.
and he granted he's not very good at chewing gum.
No, like, he's not.
Gum weird.
He does. And then later it's like he never chews gum. Like, what a weird thing to know about someone, but like whomst among us does not enjoy a pleasant chew from time to time. Like, it's, you know, it's so innocuous. It's gum. But the main thing is that, and the difference between this and the new Magnum, which we didn't talk about this either, but the big action set piece toward the end of the new Magnum pilot has him jumping off a truck that's going off a cliff and leaping off it onto the, like, whatever, like the underside of a helicopter. Like, this is some late stage Die Hard shit. Like, what makes the real Magnum, I'll just say it, interesting and compelling is that we believe he could get hurt. Whereas this guy fucking jumping out of like space, literally.
Yeah, which is why, you know, and that kind of vulnerability is also why you can imagine, oh, right, that's right, Selleck was up for Indiana Jones.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah, and same thing with John McClane, where it's like in the early movies, he seems like he's not indestructible. And then that got thrown out the window as the franchise, for whatever reason. I mean, I know the reason, but continued to happen and get shitty. So this was a true pleasure to watch. This is an episode that Dave has talked about a lot, but we had never actually watched together. So thank you for bringing it to us. That was great. Sarah.
This is not a perfect hour and a half. In addition to some of the very lengthy, you know, business shots that were a hallmark of this era when an hour of TV was actually 47 minutes. There is the fact that it does have in common with the new Unreal Magnum that people don't understand how gunfire works. Like, at one point, Magnum just like, there's a fake punch that's some sort of like wax on, wax off blocking situation that is bad. And then Magnum just sort of stands up and walks up the hill to this guy to this like phone tap guy who's dangling knowing this. Like, we know the sniper is gone, but he doesn't know that. It's like, do you not understand how bullets work? Like, just because you're ready to roll, like tuck and roll over there doesn't mean Ivan is done shooting at you, but cool. Like, you got away with it, so that's fine. The guy playing TC, Roger Mosley, I think his name is. Is not good at much. he's a very sort of like, he's like likable looking, but this is some pretty dark shit for 80s TV. And I can't really say that he's up to it. I was entertained, but not impressed necessarily. However, there are all these delightful 80s signifiers, including the bunt nip, known as a Mercedes convertible.
Oh, sure.
Always there for it.
Yeah.
That has saved numerous 90210 episodes in B-roll for me. And speaking of that, as the original Manchurian candidate fake Nuzo, I guess, I believe that's played by James Whitmore Jr., son of Brooks from Shawshank, and directed many, many 90210 episodes and has done a ton of TV. So
awesome.
That is Jibby Whitmore Jr. Actually, James Whitmore III. The things you find out on the IMDb while watching this. the darkness, I think, was the most compelling thing for me. Like, I didn't watch this show like contemporaneously, but I had relatives who went to Vietnam, and it was the thing that was not discussed as a culture. And the fact that Magnum was like grappling with it in this way, and then that they actually went through with it and had him fucking kill the guy at the end is like, it's not what you expect even today. Like, you wouldn't necessarily expect a network protagonist to just end the dude, because that's a network note. Like, you can't have him just kill the guy.
I think you mean waste him, Sarah. Waste him.
Yes. But it was, and especially, like, you know, our relationship with Russia at that time, some ways different, some ways the same. That was really interesting to me that they went there, not just with that, but with showing the POW camp and all that stuff.
All right, producer Dave here. Our lawn cutter guy just showed up and started cutting the lawn. So you may start hearing lawnmower sounds on my track. Apologies. And B, we had to cut Sarah off mid-thought. So we are going to try our best to continue from that thought, but no guarantees.
Thought, quote unquote. I was almost done. This was unexpected that they would try to go to this like deer hunter place, given where we as a society were with our not grappling with Vietnam. It was pretty impressive. Also impressive, Tom Selleck's butt in an extremely tight pair of jeans
for
and
real.
Some very short shorts. Amen. And that's all I got. This was not exactly what I expected. This was a very enjoyable presentation. And now let's turn it over to our Magnum pieologist, David Tuchel.
All right. So I think one of the things about the canon is the more familiar and the more beloved the show is for me, the harder I'm going to judge it. And I think this is going to be a one of those situations. I had previously submitted Paper War to the canon, and it was accepted. To jog your memory, that is the one of the sort of escalating practical jokes between Magnum Higgins that ends with the destruction of the Bridge in the River Kwai bridge that was started to be built here. did you see the sunrise? I think, don't read too much into this, but I think it might be, might be more of a canon-esque ending than a canon-esque complete episode on first blush. The first thing anybody who is familiar with Magnum PI remembers about this episode is, of course, the ending, including the creator of Archer, who just, you know, wholesale used it in his series. And I think that's where a lot of people know it from, that it may not even know it's from Magnum until, you know, they read about it the next day in, you know, AV Club or whatever. My biggest problem with this episode is that it does suffer from age, you know, like by today's pacing, this is sort of like 5 pounds of Magnum in a 10 pound bag. Like, it really does suffer from the pacing of its era and the fact that it had another 5 minutes to fill per hour to boot. That said, like, I think your presentation was right on that. This is so representative of a really great example and a high bar for a time in television history where the bar wasn't set that high. Like, yeah. As 80s action stuff goes, you know, you hit like the four big shows for me as a kid were Magnum, A-Team, Dukes of Hazzard, and Knight Rider. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the ones I never missed. And those are the ones that we talk about the next day, you know, at recess at school. And Magnum was sort of like the most grown up of those, right? Like, that was
right.
That was the most adult of the shows that kids were watching at the time. And I would be 8 when Magnum started. So I would be 10 or 11 when this hit. I remember watching this episode when it first came out and being totally traumatized. And you didn't talk about this in your presentation, but during one of the flashback scenes, there are a bunch of Magnum and his buddies. They're all suspended in tiny little cages that are just big enough for their bodies from trees. And they're just sort of swaying side to side. And this Magnum is TC. And it's this other guy called Cookie. And Cookie, we don't hear from in the present because Cookie's dead. And Cookie is shot by Ivan in this flashback. And to watch it now, I kind of laugh at myself that I was so traumatized by it. Not that the shooting of somebody who's defenseless is in the cage, he's begging for his life. Like, that's all very scary when you're a kid. But he seeps out what I can only call life paint.
After he shot. It is real red.
Really red acrylic school grade paint that coming out of this wound. But the really traumatizing part of that scene is Cookie is begging for his life before he shot. And after he shot, everybody in the scene freaks out and they're screaming at him to stick his finger in the wound.
Yeah.
And that idea of sticking your finger in an active wound on your own body freaked me the fuck out when I was a kid. Like, really, like there are some instant memories that you always keep when you're a child. And I have a few weird ones, but this is the one where I was like, oh, just like the whole cookie finger scene. Like, for some other reason,
the cookie finger scene, as it shall be known.
1980. Here's another one. This is random. Nothing to do with Magnum, but now this is in my head. I got to say it. Canada Cup, that's a hockey tournament, 1980. It was Canada versus Czechoslovakia. The score was 2-2. It was in the third period. I forgot to turn the light off on the garage outside. And my dad was like one of those doors open too long, turn the lights off, you know, real energy. Well, you know, he's just thrifty. You know, I'm not going to pretend he's an environmentalist. He's just like, you know, they'll let the flies in. You're wasting money.
He's a dad.
So he told me to go out. And it's the dead of winter. And I go to the garage to turn off the switch. And as I'm turning off the switch, this big giant bug crawls across my hand. Like, it seemed like a big giant bug. I'm sure it was just like a large ladybug or something. But in my mind's eye, it was like a movie Mimic, you know, where this giant cockroach is crawling. And I'm like, aah! So like, that's the same, around the same time as this Magnum thing that also traumatized me so much. So as soon as I remember Magnum, I also remember 1980, Czechoslovakia, Canada 2-2, Canada Cup, bug on my light switch hand. So this episode really stuck with me. Those two scenes stuck with me. The cookie scene and, of course, the end scene where the hero actually follows through and shoots somebody. I feel like there is a Looney Tunes cartoon where two kids are watching TV. They're watching Coyote and the Roadrunner.
Yes.
And they're like commentating that, you know, he never catches them and everything like that. Or the, you know, the Krusty the Clown episode where he's watching, you know, Itchy get scratchy. No, scratchy get itchy. And they're all like, wow, we'll never show that again. Like, I felt like it was one of those moments where the rules were tossed. We saw something incredibly special and you were there for it in real time. Even like when I was 11 or whatever, I kind of like knew instinctively that this is going to sound too grandiose, but it was a little piece of TV history that just happened. You know, like the hero actually did the thing. He actually shot him.
Yeah.
The rest of the episode around those two moments, there was things I forgot about that I really enjoyed. I always enjoy a sniper scene. I love sniper scenes in movies and TV shows. The one in Lethal Weapon at the end of Lethal Weapon, I really love. I just wish this one did a better job of the geography of it. Like if they could have done a helicopter shot to show where everybody is or something.
Yeah, it did feel a little bit like we've only got half a day for the sniper scene.
Yeah, exactly.
Get it done.
Yeah. But I always love that sort of stuff. And there's little moments here and there. The Higgins moments are great. Tar's right. TC's Roger E. Not a great actor. But
that was Sarah. But I do agree.
Oh, sorry, Sarah. But as far as like the crux of the show, where you know they do balance life experience with light comedy, and you know the characters can flow in between them while delivering you know a solid hour or 2 hours of television is in effect. I think like if this was done today, they probably could have done it in one episode.
Or the Walking Dead, it's a 50-minute episode.
Right. Yeah. They supersize it. Yeah. Yeah. They give it a couple extra minutes and there you go. But so goes all of TV from that era. You know, they all showed the guy walking across the room to sit at the table instead of getting into the bar and then being at the bar. You know, that's just the way shit was done then. And I can't really fault her for that. I just saying, like, if you're going to watch it new, expecting like something that it feels extremely modern, you're going to be let down. You know, it's not that pace, but there's lots of love here. Magnum is Magnum, you know, like you still buy him as Thomas Magnum that you've seen in other episodes that aren't so dark. They did a really good job not making this beat seem out of left field. Like we knew that he had experiences in the military. We knew that he carried him with him. And here is, well, not the payoff, but here's one of the things that happens as a, you know, as a result of that. And it's kind of amazing that it happened in 1982, 83, I think this episode.
Yeah.
So I would say it is a product of his time, but a great product of his time. If that's allowable. And I think, Tara made this observation when we were watching it. She didn't mention it, so I will mention it. Ivan is the janitor from Scrubs. Like is his clone. They were grown in the same vat.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Bo Svenson looks like the guy from the janitor from Scrubs.
Yeah, he looks like Neil Flynn.
Yeah.
I see that. Yeah. I see
totally.
That.
The blonde verge.
Yeah.
Bo Svenson, who never met a movie called Inglourious Bastards he didn't like, regardless of spelling.
So I say, yeah, this is definitely canon worthy. And you know, I think it is even more so when you sort of put it in a little TV historical, you know, positioning perspective. So I'm going to say yes. Tara Ariano, what say you?
I say yes as well.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I forgot to mention that they sort of lull you with that date that goes on too long, and then they kaboom the car and they kill that guy too, which you're not expecting. And then they show those really grody feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not fucking around.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but does Mac come back as sort of Magnum PI's heavenly, you know, escort in that episode that was supposed to be the season finale? Am I remembering that right?
And I feel like Mac also has a twin brother who's a con man who shows up in later seasons.
The later seasons of Magnum.
Oh, no, the twin brother. Oh, well, let's forget we heard that. What say you, Sarah D. Bunting?
Let us forget that and say yes.
All right. That means Magnum PI Season 3, Episodes 1 and 2. Did you see the sunrise? You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for our winner and loser of the week. Sarah has her winner.
I do. The winner is Marshmallows. Veronica Mars will be revived at Hulu or on Hulu starting next summer, 2019. And Hulu got the streaming rights to the complete series, which for people who might be returning to their podcasts about the show, this is a relief because now we don't have to fly to England and find it as a torrent.
And loser of the week?
Oh, well, Colin Jost and Michael Shea went into the Emmy hosting job basically treating the entire enterprise with total contempt, acting like people who enjoy award shows are dumb, and a little gay. And the result is their Emmys were the least watched Emmys telecast ever. Is this in part because of cord cutting and the lower ratings for live events in general? Yes. Do I still blame the two of them personally because they fucking suck? Yes, also.
Speaking about things that fucking suck, do you know what time it is? It's game time. Yay! All right, everybody. This is the third game time of the current season. Our season scores are Tara 1, Sarah 1, Value Guests still looking to get on the board. Today we are playing Backdoor Pilots from Game Time superstar Dan Cassino.
Cassino! All right.
Dan Cassino, of course, earns himself an extra credit, or Dave Forsening, redeemable whenever he so damn chooses. He writes, "There's a long tradition in TV of using backdoor pilots in which the main characters of a show get shunted off to the side in favor of some new characters in the hopes that viewers want to find out more. In this game, you'll be given the title of an episode of the originating series, which is sometimes but not always the title of the attempted spinoff, and a description of the episode. All right, you have to identify the originating show. If you need a hint, I will give you the network and the year that it aired. Now, finally, here's a little twist. Whether you get the answer right or wrong, you have to decide if the spinoff was actually picked up with a simple yes or no." Wow. Here's an example. If I told you that The Farm was about Jeb, played by Silicon Valley's Thomas Middleditch, and the rest of his dysfunctional family learning to work together when their aunt dies and leaves them a beet farm on the condition that they all work it together, you'd get points if you knew it was an episode of
The Office.
The Office.
Yes. And if you needed a hint, I would tell you NBC in 2013. The right answer would be worth 2 points. And if you knew that it did not lead to a series, you would earn one more point. All right. 2 points for the show.
Okay.
1 point for the show after the hint. 1 extra point if you know yes or no. So potential 3 points. Okay.
Got it.
Today, our value guests will play as a team because they are friends and they are film picks. So our teams are...
I am too dumb.
Todd and Steven.
It's good for me to have a team.
Playing as value guests, and then Sarah and Tara. So let's throw it to Picky to see which of those is going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. Value guest thrown into the fire. It's going to be value guest Sarah Tara, but let's find out about our steel meal statuses.
Okay. Forgot this was coming up. Let me flip to the front of my book. Okay. Sarah still has hella steel meals. She has 6. I have 0. Valued guests have 1.
Okay. Can you explain to the valued guests how that works?
Yes. If Sarah or I gets it wrong, you can jump in and say steel meal and you can steal the points. But, I don't know when it would be advisable to do that because of the cascading lower points situation.
That is
really up to you.
Yes. But feel free to use them. All right. That's how it's done. Are we ready to play Backdoor Pilots?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay. The episode
title.
Good luck
with your dead weight, apparently, Steven. Just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Your episode title, Assignment Earth. The cast comes into conflict with an alien codenamed Gary 7, who has been dispatched, along with his assistant, who can turn into a cat, to prevent nuclear catastrophe on Earth until the planet is socially and politically ready for the destructive power it now has. So, I need to know, what the hell is the originating series? For 2 points, need a hint, I'm going to give you the network in the year.
That's Star Trek, the original series.
You are correct. And did this spinoff happen?
It did not.
And that's how it's done, folks. And that is
that's
a
how you do
full
it.
3 points. Yeah.
Textbook.
Thank you, Steve Skelton.
If all of my questions are about Star Trek spinoffs, uh-huh, I'm in good shape.
I will remain quiet.
I can't promise that there's any more Star Trek ones, but I also can't promise that there's no more spinoffs where the assistant can turn into a cat either. So who's to say? Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes.
The episode is called Better Days. Disney Channel Moppet Cory gets away with her sister when she wins a cameo role in her favorite show, Better Days. She finds out that stardom isn't always a good thing, and that the star of the show, a child actor named Allie Walker, is living a double life as a normal kid in middle school.
Hint.
This is Disney Channel, 2005.
2005. Oh, God.
Yeah. That series tried to make this backdoor pilot work.
Hannah Montana?
Oh, that is a good guess.
That's what I would have guessed.
It is, in fact, That's So Raven. Though the concept for this spinoff backdoor pilot episode was eventually retooled into Hannah Montana.
Do I get to guess whether it got picked up?
Yes.
Yes?
No. That was... Sorry. My apologies. Tara, Bloodlines is the name of the episode.
What is the title? Sorry.
Bloodlines.
Okay.
On a side trip to Chicago, the main cast discovers that the city's underbelly is divided between powerful clans of monsters, including werewolves and shapeshifters.
I mean, I guess this is old Beauty and the Beast. Damn!
It isn't. That's from the CW in 2014. That show was Supernatural.
Oh, okay. Then I'm going to also say, maybe this is the spinoff. I'm going to say it did not become a show.
That's good for 1 point. It did not. Okay. It did not. All right.
Maybe that's what turned into New Beauty and the Beast. Okay, proceed.
Here we go. Back to value guess. Digger Doyle. Aaron Gray of Buck Rogers and Silver Spoons plays security expert Joy Digger Doyle, who helps the lead character prevent theft of somebody's new book, which is on magnetic tape for some reason.
Okay, Aaron Gray, spinoff.
Backdoor pilot. Aaron Gray, she of Buck Rogers and Silver Spoons, plays security expert Joy Digger Doyle, who helps the lead character.
But I can't think of... Todd, I
really don't know.
I just want you guys to think about it for a second as I read the rest of the clue. Digger Doyle helps the lead character prevent the theft of somebody's new book, which is on magnetic tape for some reason. All right.
I have a guess, Skelton.
So,
go for it.
Murder, She Wrote?
That's what I would have guessed too.
Me too.
All right. I'm going to tell you the year and the network, and you're probably going to get mad at yourself pretty quick. This episode, 1981, the network CBS.
Oh, damn it.
It's Magnum.
It was Magnum, yeah.
Yeah.
Did Digger Doyle, the character, enjoy her own spinoff show? Yes or no?
I don't think so. I don't think it.
I'm going to say no.
You still got 1 point there. Yes, that was a Magnum PI backdoor pilot from season one. That's
that's crazy.
Yeah, that's ballsy.
That is crazy.
Sarah D. Bunting. Brian and Sylvia, two of the main cast members, travel from the boarding school to Buffalo, where they meet Sylvia, an African-American woman who's recently become married to Brian, played by Richard Dean Anderson, which causes tension with Sylvia's family. As you know, Richard Dean Anderson played...
MacGyver. From the boarding school, you say, Dave.
From the boarding school, I do say.
Interesting. Might that be a fact of life of the show?
It is good for 2 points.
Nice.
Did the show become a series?
I
mean, did this backdoor pilot get picked up?
I think it... I'm going to say yes.
It did not, but here's a little fun fact. In later seasons of Facts of Life, it's mentioned that the couple got divorced. Fun fact, maybe not.
Damn, that's cold.
Wow. Rude.
Tara Ariano.
Unnecessary.
Episode titled Buddies.
Okay.
After dumping dinner in the trash compactor and dropping his wife's wedding ring in the garbage disposal, our hero goes on his TV show to carp about how terrible women are with two audience members played by Dave Chappelle and Jim Brewer.
On his show, I'm going to guess that's Home Improvement.
2 points.
Oh.
Nice.
I'm going to say that did not become a spinoff.
It did become a spin-off. I believe it was called Buddies, and Jim Brewer got recast before it went to series.
Yeah, that'll happen.
I wanted you to say that was the genesis of Chappelle's Show. Oh, well.
ran for 5 episodes in 96. All right, back to Value Guess. The episode is called The Don. That's D-O-N. Ben takes a case defending a mafia don played by Jose Ferrer. All right, it seems to be a letter missing from that, but let's go with it. Who's being prosecuted for allegedly killing a rival? The prosecutor, played by William Conrad, is shown to be tough but fair and eventually comes to realize that the real killer had a personal motive. What is the originating show that tried this backdoor pilot?
Can you
this one, you take this one, Todd?
Oh, thanks, Steve. Can you just read the very first sentence?
I sure can. Ben takes a case defending a mafia don played by Jose F., who's being prosecuted for allegedly killing a rival. Now, remember, you can just take a crack at the show, sight unseen, for 2 points, or you can ask for the hint.
What do you think, Skelton? Do you want me to take
a
crack?
We got a hint. We got a hint it.
Okay, get a hint.
Okay, we're talking NBC 1986.
Skelton, I have a guess. Do you know?
I would only have a guess as well.
We got a lawyer named Ben. We got a mafia. We got William Conrad.
Do you want to guess or do you want me to, Skelton?
I don't know. My guess. This isn't our answer yet.
Okay.
We're.
I understand.
My guess. My guess would just be a stab in the dark, and I'd say L.A. Law.
You know, that was my guess, too, so let's go with it.
L.A. Law. Does teamwork make the dream work? No.
It does. God damn it. I don't know.
At least we were wrong together as one.
Matlock. That was a backdoor pilot. Matlock. Now, did that show become a reality?
Not a reality show. Just
Skelton, what do you think?
I'd say my gut says no.
I say no too.
And my gut is terrible.
Prosecutor played
Jake
by
and the Fat Man?
William Conrad that became Jake and the Fat
Man. Oh, damn it.
Sarah D. Bunting. Cavender is coming. In a bizarre departure for this classic show, a bumbling, seemingly alcoholic angel, accompanied by a laugh track, tries to help a depressed woman by giving her riches and an entry into high society. However, she hates it and asks to be turned back to her old life, which she now fully appreciates.
What the fuck?
Cavender is coming.
Hint.
CBS, 1962.
Whoa.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Well, it's a departure. That's a clue.
Yeah.
Not really.
I vaguely remember this. So something I've seen, which will help you very little, but who knows?
Drunk alcoholic angel?
Seemingly alcoholic angel, yeah. Laugh track.
Dragnet. I don't know.
That backdoor pilot was on The Twilight Zone. That was a Twilight Zone episode.
Whoa.
Okay.
Weird.
All right. Did it become a series?
Yes.
It did not. Thank you.
That does seem like the kind of bullshit people would try in 1962.
Well, I mean, Car 50 or My Mother the Car. Like,
yeah. Right, yeah.
You never know what they'd put on back then.
Sure.
Charmed Lives. The advertising executive half of the main cast leaves Connecticut and travels to San Francisco to shoot a commercial. Tension erupts on the set when the woman who's supposed to be the photographer, played by Bosom Buddies Donna Dixon, is mistaken for the actress, played by Fran Drescher, who's supposed to be starring in the commercial.
Man, I thought I had it, and then I lost it, because that doesn't sound like any 30-something I've ever seen. Who the hell is in advertising in, oh my God, in Connecticut? Hint.
ABC.
Yeah.
1986.
Is it 30-something? Shit.
It is not. It is.
What is it?
Who's the Boss?
What?
Oh, wow. Of course.
Okay, so Who the Boss attempted the spinoff, Charmed Lives. Did Charmed Lives become a series?
Oh, no.
Yes. Four episodes of Charmed Lives exist somewhere out there. All right, value guess. The episode title, Code of Vengeance.
Oh.
Our crime-fighting star teams up with a government agent and the widow of a murdered lawyer to track down a criminal mastermind who has stolen a prototype rocket launcher. What resulted was an episode that's considered the worst of the series, which is a bit of a high bar and a remarkable dip in the show's normally solid ratings. Code of Vengeance.
Code of Vengeance.
I really feel like we should know this one.
Yeah, I feel like I should.
I'm going to give you a hint. You probably should, given today's, you know, general content.
Skelton, do you want to get the hint or do you have an idea?
No, I have no. Let's get the hint. What the hell?
Let's get the
hint.
Okay.
Yeah, hint.
Network, NBC, year 1984.
84.
Yeah. Got crime fighting? Rocket launcher?
Rocket, yeah.
Am I too early to say?
Do you remember when rocket launchers were such a big deal?
Yeah.
Do you remember when they kind of entered the public consciousness, you know, like that Rambo era where everybody was like, rocket launchers, wow.
Skelton, you're meaning your guess is Spencer for Hire.
Well, that is the spin-off show. Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of right now.
We're looking for the original series that aired this back to our pilot.
Yeah. That's the only thing I got, but am I a couple years early for that?
No, I don't know. I said guess Spencer for Hire.
All right, Spencer for Hire.
Mm. It's not Spencer for Hire. It is. I'm going to see if Sarah knows it.
Hunter?
Hunter?
Hunter is my answer.
No, it's not Hunter. It is, in fact, a little show called Knight Rider.
Knight Rider.
Now.
Oh, that's when the... I'm sorry. I was stuck on when the show... Like, I thought the year was when the show premiered. So
oh, that's like
that,
the episode, so. Yeah. Okay, so Code of Vengeance is the show. Was it picked up?
Was it picked up, Skelton?
I'm
going to guess yes.
All right, let's go with yes.
That's good for a point.
Hey, nice.
Dan Cassino writes, yes, it's very convoluted, but 4-hour-long episodes eventually aired. Code of wow. Vengeance. All right, Sarah Bunting. The episode is Fallon. Adrian Pazdar is a ruthless Department of Homeland Security agent on the hunt for a dirty bomb in New York who comes into conflict with the generally easygoing cops and a title not a cop of the main cast after they discover a taxi cab that's showing signs of radioactivity.
Wow.
Yep. Whoa.
Speaking of convoluted.
And
all right. This is ABC 2010. Recent-ish.
Castle?
Is that your answer?
Yes.
Yay!
Nice.
All right. Did Fallon become a series?
No.
Whip, you're correct. Sorry, mispress. Thank you. All right, this is going to bring us into our first score break. The Finder.
Yeah.
After a beetle-devoured corpse is identified and linked to a Spanish treasure map. Why is this not still on? The co-lead FBI agent reluctantly allows his superstitious army buddy and his team to use the buddy's psychic tracking power to find and retrieve the treasure.
This is, other than Facts of Life, the only one I've known. This is Bones was the originator. And amazing. It did become a series very briefly.
Yes, ran for 13 episodes. 13 episodes. Michael Clark Duncan's last role. RIP.
Ooh.
All right.
This is bad.
That is our first score break. Here we go. Let's hear it.
This is an extremely close game. I have 6 points. Our valued guests have 5 points. Sarah has 4 points.
All right. We're back into it. I feel like this little chunk has a lot of gimmies, but that just might be because I see all the answers. Let's find out. Value guests. The episode, Fish. Detective Fish is put on restricted duty, so the episode follows him home, where we meet his wife, Bernice, their ditzy daughter, Beverly. And back at the station, he's temporarily replaced in the first appearance of Detective Dietrich.
So, Todd.
Yeah, I know.
We know this one.
Yeah. Barney Miller.
Yeah.
And yes.
Mm-hmm.
That is 3 points. Yes, Fish ran for 2 seasons starting at 77. Well done. One of the best, right? Sarah D. Bunting, Getting Together. In an episode guest starring Farrah Fawcett and Pat Boone, full stop, the title family of the series introduces a hip musician played by teen idol Bobby Sherman to a square, tone-deaf poet and find that they make beautiful music together.
Partridge Family?
Yay!
Yeah, nice.
All right, did Getting Together get picked up?
I have had zero luck with this, and I think it probably did not, so I'm going to say it did.
You're so far in your own head, you're in your own head's head.
I know. But upside down.
14 episodes. So.
Wow.
Better than most in this game. Tara, episode title, Force 7. Force 7. And if it makes a difference, 7 is spelt out.
All right.
When the leads make a routine drunk driving stop, they become involved with a special LAPD unit comprised entirely of racially diverse martial arts experts and work with them to find a missile expert who's gone rogue.
This has got, it's got to be Chips, right?
It's got to be Chips. Nice. Now, did Force 7 become a series after its NBC 1982 debut on Chips?
Sure.
Yeah, unfortunately, it did not.
Oh, come on. You're
and
leaving money on the
is
table, NBC.
Poor for it. All right, back to value guests who I think are getting some good picky love here. Your episode is Gloria. After her husband leaves her for one of his students and moves to a commune, Gloria takes her son and moves to New York to be closer to her father. There, she gets a job working for a vet, played by Burgess Meredith, who, of course, was the Penguin from Batman 66. Veterinarian, not vet.
This Skeleton, is this?
No, this is like, it sounds so familiar, but that's as close as I'm getting.
Glory. Yeah, let's get a hint.
All right. CBS, the network, the episode Gloria aired 1982.
Hmm. Gloria.
Yeah, no, the name is, I got nothing, Todd.
I don't either. Let's take a guess. What was on air at 1982?
Let's say the A-Team.
Sure.
Steel Meal?
Steel Meal.
Is it All in the Family?
What?
It's what?
A spinoff of a spinoff.
Oh.
We're talking Archie Bunker's Place is the original series.
God.
But here's the question.
Archie Bunker's Place?
Oh, but here's the question. Geez. Was Gloria ever an actual TV series?
Who gets to answer that, valued guest?
Yep.
Okay.
Let's go back.
Go for
to
a skeleton.
I'd say let's throw caution to the wind, Todd. Let's say yes.
Yes.
Yay!
That is good for a point. I'm going to give Sarah that 1.2 just because I feel like that's a weird situation for a steel man.
Okay. Fair enough.
Speaking about Sarah, here we are at question number 17.
It's pretty cool.
It Never Entered My Mind, episode title. Lawyer McCabe, better known by an insulting nickname, is drawn into a mystery when his cardiologist is accused of killing a hospital administrator. Their investigation is aided by 3 telegenic interns.
Insulting nickname seems germane.
Your hint, CBS, 1991.
Oh, that's not what I was thinking at all.
Yeah, that's not helpful.
I'm going to throw you another hint because I'm feeling generous. And, you know, we got 2 brains on the value guest side. So I'm going to give a hint here and there. The originating series has already been mentioned in this game time.
Whoa.
Hmm.
CBS 91.
I don't know.
The originating series is Jake and the Fat Man. Jake and the Fat Man. Okay.
That guy.
Did this series...
this is like a Russian nesting doll of spin-off.
Did it become a show?
No.
It did. And guess what it's called, guys?
diagnosis murder.
Oh, twist.
All right, Tatara.
Yep.
Just a couple of guys. All right, couple of.
Yep.
Spelled like that. In this David Chase written backdoor pilot, our hero flies from L.A. to Newark because reasons and gets caught up in a mob war when two young toughs beat him up. That happens a lot. And steal his luggage in an effort to impress a mob boss. It all traces back to another mob boss, Tony Martine, whose son, Tony Jr., is acting up to get his father's attention. So what's the originating series?
I feel like in the lore of David Chase's resume, I should know what he worked on. But I do not, so hint.
NBC.
Yeah.
79.
Oh, okay. I wouldn't have known that. I still don't know. Don't know.
All right. That was the Rockford Files. Rockford Files.
Damn
okay.
It.
Oh, yeah.
Just a couple of guys. Picked up?
No.
It was not picked up. Sopranos wasn't made for a long time afterwards either and seemed to be pretty dramatically remade from this little bit. All right, this is question. Your episode title, Kelly's Kids. Kelly's Kids. Previously unseen friends of the title family, Ken and Kathy, go to the orphanage to adopt a white kid and wind up adopting his two best friends as well. But one of the kids is African-American and the other Asian-American, and this doesn't sit well with their racist neighbor, played by perennial that guy actress Molly Dodd.
I have an idea, Skelton.
You're way ahead of me, so run with it.
Is the Brady Bunch?
Sure
Yay!
Is.
Did
nice.
Kelly's Kids get a series pickup?
I'm going to say yes.
It did not, but
damn
well
it.
Done on the
all right. War I watched that.
Well guessed. Good
that was
job.
A good poll. Good poll.
Yeah, for sure.
Sarah Bunting, your episode, Mason Dixon's Girls. Mason Dixon's Possessive Girls. When the stars of the show mistakenly pick up a crate of marijuana, private detective Mason Dixon, pause there for a second, and his two beautiful assistants help them prove their innocence and take down a drug smuggling operation. What's the series?
Dukes of Hazzard.
Did Mason Dixon's Girls become a series?
Yes.
Did not. It did not.
Should have.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Boom.
All right, Tara. Mercy Reef. Mercy Reef. The main cast meets A.C. Curry, a superpowered teen who's trying to sabotage an experiment threatening sea life that's somehow taking place in Kansas. I guess.
Okay. Smallville?
That's correct. Did Mercy Reef become a series?
No.
You are correct. And guess who's back, guys? It's Roomba!
Oh,
now we
Roomba.
Take a Roomba turning off pause. Do, do.
Do, 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 do. Very
this
professional
episode
operation.
Not brought to you by robotic circle.
We're back.
Good job, Dave.
All right. This episode punctuated by many, many interruptions. All right. Value guess. Episode titled Mermaid. The main cast tries to help Millie, played by Jamie Presley, who's a mermaid who's been turned human by a sea witch in order to search for love on land. But things get tricky when one of the sisters is turned into a mermaid and they have to convince her to come home. Backdoor pilot from which series?
Mermaids.
Some good clues in there.
Skelton, do you have a guess? Or do you want to get a hint?
I don't, if you've got one or we
I have a guess, but let's hear the hint first.
All right. Hint. Your hint. WB 2002.
Okay, I think your guess is probably right then, Todd.
No, the year changed my guess, so you go ahead.
Oh, damn it. What's, what's the fairy tale show that your wife and son like?
Once Upon a Time, but I feel like 2002 is too early.
It's too early? Okay.
I feel like this is more like of a Buffy situation. Yeah. But I don't know.
We're going to need an answer, guys.
All right, Skelton. You want to say Buffy?
Was Buffy still on the air in 2002?
I don't know.
Let's just say Buffy.
Incorrect.
We're wrong.
The series. Some good hints here. We have some magic. We have sisters. We have witches.
Damn it.
That is Charmed.
Yeah,
okay. Oh, okay.
All right. Mermaid.
The show that wasn't Buffy.
Series pickup?
I'm going to say no.
Okay.
The answer is no?
Answer is no.
You are correct. 1 point. Whew. All right, Sarah Bunting. Mission to the Unknown. Mission to the Unknown. What amounts to a pretty radical departure for the series. The main character doesn't even appear in this episode about a coalition of Earth military forces and alien races combining to fight back against an exterminating alien race.
Well, that
Wait,
narrows it down.
We're not done yet. Oh, it doesn't narrow it down. How about the end of your clue? Apparently unaware that these aliens can generally be defeated by stairs.
By what?
Stairs. You know, like a staircase.
Stairs. Oh, so not like being stairs.
No, no.
That's what I was thinking.
Up and down between floors, your staircases.
You just give them like a real stank eye and they're like, fuck, forget it.
No. I still don't know what it is though. Hint, please.
All right. You'll get it after the hint, I think. BBC 1965.
Doctor Who?
Doctor Who. All right, that's good for 1 point. Mission to the Unknown. Seems like we got some cooperation between Earth and aliens and some other aliens or bad guys picked up. Yes or no?
I'll say yes.
It was not.
Oh, God. Why?
All right, bring us into a second score break. It's for Tara. Your episode title, Most Wanted.
Okay.
Bobby Morse, that's Bobby with an I, a.k.a. Mockingbird, has been burned by the spy agency she used to work at and is now on the run with her ex-husband, starting with an escape from a Siberian gulag.
Hint.
ABC 2016. So recent.
Oh, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
1 point.
Okay. Nice.
Most Wanted?
No.
It was not.
All right. Okay.
What's the score?
Still real close. I have 14. Valued guests have 12. Sarah has 11.
All right. We forgot to do the Equalizer Child Zone, but this is a pretty long game. So
I prompted you to
it,
and you 100% ignored me.
That's true.
Who said that? I don't know. Value guests, your episode title is fantastic. It is called Sons of Thunder. Sons of Thunder. When Reverend Thunder Malloy... When Reverend Thunder Malloy, a friend of the series title cop, dies of a heart attack, his sons return to Texas and set up a dojo and a PI business to help those who can't work within the law.
Wow.
Sons
a lot of data
Thunder.
There.
Wow.
Yeah.
Skelton, you got anything?
I would just say with full confidence, it's got to be Walker, Texas Ranger.
Okay. Let's go with that.
Nice.
Wow.
That was a spinoff backdoor pilot from Walker, Texas Ranger. But the question is, was it picked up to series Sons of Thunder?
It seems... I'm going to say, Todd, I'm going to say yes.
I will go with that.
You are correct.
Sons
of Thunder graced us for six episodes.
I would like everyone to know that the calling of my farts, Thunder Malloy, has also been picked up to series, effective immediately.
All right, Sarah. Sorry. Bunting. Promised Land. A family is down to its last dollar, traveling by trailer to a new town, hoping for a job and home. The main characters try to restore the faith of the father, played by Major Dad himself, and inspire him to, quote, redefine what it means to be a good neighbor and recapture the American dream. Promised Land.
Promised Land. I will need a hint.
CBS. 1996.
Touched by an Angel?
Yes.
Good for a point.
Nice.
Now, Promised Land, starring Major Dad, or at least in the cast. Series pickup? Yes or no?
That seems to me like it should have been picked up, so I will say no.
I was ready to sing in there. Promised Land ran for 3 seasons.
Wow.
3 seasons of Promised Land.
I don't remember that at all.
96 to 99. Yeah.
Huh. Promised Land.
Tari Ariana, return engagements. Uh-huh. Gary, played by Ted Shackelford, and sure. Joan Van Ark's Valene, return to the family homestead in Texas to announce they are getting remarried and moving to California.
Oh, shit.
This is a backdoor pilot from what
yeah.
show?
Yeah. Dynasty? Knott's Landing?
This is it was Knott's Dallas Landing? Was the show.
Oh.
Fuck!
Now, did this get picked up to series?
Yes, because I think it turned into Knott's Landing.
It turned into Knott's Landing. Ran for 14 years. I think I'm going to guess the most successful question of this, most successful show in this game time.
Right.
Value guess, Task Force X. Task Force X. Shady government official Amanda Waller recruits a number of superpowered criminals previously put away by the show's main hero to run dangerous missions with a promise of early release if they're successful.
Oh, I can't think of which one of the comic book shows it was the spinoff from. It's one of the DC shows, Todd.
I'm not going to be much help with the comic book.
I'm going to guess Arrow.
Wow.
Okay, now Task Force X is the name of the episode. Was this backdoor pilot picked up to series?
I'm going to say no.
You are correct. And why wasn't it? Because that became the movie Suicide Squad, so they canned the show of the same concept. Yeah. Sarah D. Bunting, Sister Michael Wants You. A cameraman is killed at a convent and the tape he was shooting goes missing, leading Dr. Mark to go undercover as a priest where he teams up with a crime-solving nun played by one Delta Burke. That was a backdoor pilot from what show?
That's a lot.
That really is a lot. I will need a hint.
All right. CBS, 1994. This show also already mentioned in this game.
Diagnosis Murder? Take it.
Does it seem like this concept made it to series?
Starring Delta Burke as a nun?
Crime-solving nun.
Crime-solving nun. Yes, it did.
Time of Your Life, Tara. Time of Your Life. Daphne hires Victor as a nanny for Diana and gets help job hunting from Kirsten. Meanwhile, Sarah thinks she's found her father in New York and plans to meet him, meaning that she will have to leave Bailey. That's a lot of character names.
Yep, that's Party of Five.
One. Okay. Picked up?
And yes, it was briefly.
Time of Your Life was picked up briefly.
Oh, 12 episodes
across the millennium. All right, value guess. Tony's Boys, as Tony with an I. After an attempt is made on the lives of the main cast, their boss hires a rival detective agency run by his old friend Antonio Blake. Sorry, by his old friend Antonia Blake to keep an eye on his employees. She sends a trio she calls her boys, former Olympian Bob, Master of Disguise Matt, and champion rodeo rider Cotton. The main cast then tries to ditch the men as soon as possible.
Wow.
Rodeo rider?
Rodeo rider Cotton.
I have a guess, Skelton, but...
You go with it, because I can't get off rodeo.
It's The Bachelor!
Do you want to get a hint, or should I just take the guess?
Just take the guess.
All right, Charlie's Angels.
Yes!
Okay, so the episode called Tony's Boys started on Charlie's Angels. Did Tony Boy get picked up for series?
I'd be taking a shot in the dark, Skelton. Do you want to take it?
Well, I mean, my shot in the dark would be, that seems like a cocaine yes.
A cocaine yes. Okay, I like it. Cocaine yes.
Cocaine yes. TV no.
Oh, I don't know. Someone was sober.
Sarah D. Bunting, your episode title, Top of the Heap. Al's childhood pal Charlie and Charlie's son Vinny attend a high society fundraiser intending to run into some rich women. They plan to marry the punk drunk boxer Vinny off to someone with money. But, and this is theoretically the funny part, Charlie gets hit on by an overweight woman. Top of
Hint.
The heap. Fox, 91.
I said Al, if that helps.
Oh, Alice. I heard Alice. Thank you, Tara. Married with children.
All right. Top of the heap. Series?
I mean, they would put almost anything on back then, including a sitcom starring the Lawrence twins, but I'm still going to say no.
Six episodes.
Damn
top of the heap. The ultimate imposter. Dr. Wells has a new project that involves the direct transfer of information to the brain of Joe Patton from a computer. In theory, this will make him able to take on any skill, imitate anyone. However, Joe's girlfriend, Jenny, expresses concern for Joe's safety.
Ugh, fucking Jenny. Hint.
ABC, 1977.
Oh. This is not going to be right, but $6 Million Man. Oh, okay.
Nice.
All right. Ultimate Imposter is the episode title. Was this backdoor pilot picked up?
Sure.
Not only was it not picked up, this is the second of two attempts at this on $6 Million Man to make it happen. Neither wow. got picked up. All right.
Furthermore, the executive producer was shot at midnight by a full moon.
Score break. Here we go, Tara.
Okay, still real close. Sarah has 14. I have 19. Our valued guests have 20.
All Ooh. Right. Guess what? Wait, everybody has one question left.
Oh, my God.
Dun, dun. Good luck, guys.
Don't screw this up, Todd.
Why is it on me now? God damn it.
Can they expand that lead with the following backdoor pilot question? Episode title, Twilight. Learning that his mother is dying, our heroes head to Corinth, where they reminisce with the dying woman about their early days training to be warriors, leading to interminable flashbacks that are supposed to pique our interest in a spinoff. In the present, the mother begs her son to reconcile with his immortal father before dying.
Immortal father.
We
gotta get a hint on this one before we get it wrong.
Yeah.
All right. Your hint, the network is, it's a syndicated show, no network, the year 1998.
1998?
Skeleton, what if it's like Xena or Hercules?
Oh, yeah. Could be Xena or Hercules or maybe not Highlander.
Pick one. You pick one. Go.
Oh, God. You're putting the pressure all on
you,
me.
You want to hear the highlights of the description again?
Yeah, yes. One more time.
We got our Corinthian leather. We got a dying woman. We got some flashbacks. We have an immortal father.
I'm going to say Hercules.
I concur.
You know, I'm not going to press it, but can I get the full title just for shits and giggles?
Hercules...
Yeah.
The Legendary Journey?
Yeah, Hercules Legendary is the name.
Well done.
Yay.
All right, that's good for one point.
Right?
Now, the question is, this episode was called Twilight. Did the concept here get spun off into its own picked-up show?
What's that?
What do you think? I don't think so. What do you think?
I think it got spun off into Xena, Warrior Princess.
Oh, okay. I mean, sure. Why not? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you got about it the whole wrong way, but I can't argue with that answer. It did get picked up. That was Young Hercules.
Oh!
50 episodes starring...
Ryan Gosling,
correct.
Yeah, the Gaz.
The Gaz.
The future Thunder Malloy.
All right, that gives you 22 points, putting the pressure on Tara.
Holy smokes.
Last question for Sarah. Valley Girls, backdoor pilot presented as flashback in which Lily recounts getting kicked out of her posh Santa Barbara boarding school, running away to L.A. and getting caught up in the party scene.
I don't know. How I Met Your Mother?
That was Gossip Girl, Now, did Valley Girls get picked up to series?
No.
Correct.
Finally.
Yay.
No time like the present. All right, Tara.
The spell is broken.
You need all 3 points, correct?
To tie.
All right.
Ooh. Yeah.
Windward Circle. Generally despised boyfriend character travels to Venice Beach, where he reunites with his father and has to deal with the dad's live-in girlfriend and her hyper-articulate, book-loving daughter.
Oh, picky. You sweet bitch. This is Gilmore Girls. And it was not picked up, thank God.
You are correct, and you've just forced the tie. Let's hear the scores.
Okay, Sarah finished strong with 15. I and the valued guests are tied with 22 points.
Ooh, all right, guys.
This is so exciting.
This means we have our tiebreaker. This is how it works. I'm going to read you a short description of 3 unsuccessful backdoor pilots that all came from the same sitcom.
Okay.
All these backdoor pilots aired in the same year. That year, 1990. First person to name the sitcom wins the game. I'm just throwing it all fucking out there. Shout as much as you want, when you want, however you want. The first I hear the correct show, they win.
Got it.
Show number one.
Good luck, gentlemen. Family Feud handshake.
Show number one, Fair Exchange. Sarah visits her relatives in Albuquerque, where her identical cousin, also played by Nicole Eggert, is hosting a exchange student.
Charles in Charge.
Backdoor pilots also included Almost Family and Lost Resort, but we don't even need to hear about those because Tara clinched the game.
Nice.
Good job.
Well done, Tara.
Congratulations.
Tara.
Oh, but well a valiant fought. Effort.
Also, I would have guessed Baywatch, so... Clearly, I did not deserve to win this game.
That was a close one. Well done, everybody. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. Mahalo Nui Loa for listening to our thoughts on the Magnum PI reboot and following us around the dial as we talked about New Amsterdam, Maniac, The Good Place, and Family Ties. Stephen and Todd asks, did you see the sunrise getting into the canon? And the answer was yes. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's very close backdoor pilot game time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
you have no concept of the depth of my ire.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I've lived my own version of Stalag 17 since then.
Todd Anderson.
Fishers attack dogs? No problem, I have a tennis ball.
And Stephen Skelton.
I've been wearing a khaki safari ensemble this whole time.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great.
I know you, Thomas. I had you for 3 months at Okwe. I know you better than your mother. Your sense of honor and fair play. Oh, you could shoot me. If I was armed and coming after you. But like this, Thomas, never. Goodbye, Thomas. До свидания. Ivan. Yes?
Did you see the sunrise this morning?
Yes. Why?
You win!
That's the best thing that's ever happened to me.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.